I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. A much-needed book is out now, A Bitter Pill, How the Medical System is Failing the Elderly. It is written by Dr. John Sloan, who is a senior academic physician in the Department of Family Practice at the University of British Columbia. He provides a view onto elderly care, filling in the knowledge gaps we might have on how older patients are cared for. The anecdotes and case studies are fascinating to read and an instructive way to understand these issues. Dr. Sloan has spent well over 30 years caring for the frail elderly, many years conducting his practice outside an office doing house calls, one of the few doctors who did so. A Bitter Pill is published by Greystone. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, John Sloan. Good morning, Dr. Sloan.
Good morning, Joe. Thank you very much for having me on.
You're very welcome. Now, the terms that you use in the book are interesting. You refer to the frail elderly. Is that the term we should use?
Well, sure, one can. That's sort of the technical term in geriatrics. I've preferred in the book the term fragile elderly because I thought frail might lead people astray, but the group of people we're talking about, it doesn't a whole lot matter what you call them. They're still the same crowd.
How does a book like this come about? You've retired as a doctor that does house calls, right?
Not entirely. I still have my foot in it, but I've certainly cut back my practice and handed a great deal of it over to a wonderful group of people who are continuing with the work. The book started because I found over a period of years, and I had been doing nothing but the care of frail, fragile old people at home for about 15 years, that the kinds of things that my medical training and that the medical system was encouraging us all to do for these folks was not generally the kinds of things that they need and want. And so I scratch my head over that time and time again and look into it a little more and eventually come around to a view that it sounds a bit radical, but actually the more I talk to my colleagues and other people in healthcare, the more I think while we pay lip service to giving modern healthcare's formulas to these people, most of us don't think that there's any way that it's real good care for them.
So what would be good care? I mean, is it that we're drugging them too much? That we're over prescribing?
Yeah. No, I understand, and that's a very good question. And the difficulty with it is you can't answer for the fragile elderly as a group what is good care, because what is good care for each of them is care that works for each of them, and you come to that through a process of trial and error with the individual rather than by applying a cookbook, which is what we're increasingly doing in modern healthcare. So, modern healthcare's priorities really are prevention, number one, and prevention, while we talk about lifestyle, the evidence that lifestyle works is really not all that great. And where the real push is in modern healthcare is prevention with drugs, prevention with medication. And so, if you meet a definition of high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes or osteoporosis or that you're in what they call class 1 heart failure, why you get a group of medications that are the so-called best practice treatment for that condition. Trouble is that when we confront a fragile old person, most of the time they bristle with all of those definitions. So, they will be, when they hit the emergency room, all of the above. And the result, because the doctors do their job well and they follow the rules, is that that person leaves the encounter, whether it's with a specialist or in the hospital or whatever it is, on, 12 medications, let's say, or 6 medications. And none of those medications are drugs that make that person feel any better. They're all drugs that are calculated based on evidence to prevent some catastrophic event in the future. And the evidence, in my opinion, doesn't apply to this group of people. And the future, well, you know, the future is very hard to predict for them. So, you know, priority one, which is prevention, is not a good idea generally for fragile elderly people. Priority two is rescue. You know, and we're real good at responding to a person with chest pain who can't breathe, to somebody who's hurt themselves badly in a car accident, a child who's terribly sick with an overwhelming infection. The ambulance comes, they're in the emergency room in a breathtakingly short period of time. They're admitted to the hospital, and we rescue the person from this catastrophe. The problem is that if fragile old people have been cared for properly, the reasons why they're fragile, the reasons why they, you know, their memory is poor and they have difficulty getting around and they can't perform their activities of daily living, aren't remediable. There's nothing we can do about them. We've tried in primary care, typically. You know, we've made sure it isn't because the person's depressed or because the person has, you know, Parkinson's disease that we can treat or because they're on too many medications. And so that person will land in the hospital through this ambulance ER hospital rescue sort of slide, and we keep trying to fix them, and we can't fix them. You know, we can't make fragility, frailty, the fact that you're 92 years old and you've got a whole bunch of things wrong with you that nobody can fix, we can't make that go away. Sad reality. We can't through the application of the kinds of things that go on in a hospital. Typically, you know, there are exceptions. So there's, you know, priority number two, rescue, does nothing but make old people bewildered and miserable, and they end up using resources that can't help them.
And I guess that's one of the reasons why you practiced outside of an office. So you did house calls.
It is one, in a way. That another is that these people can't get to an office realistically.
Right.
But it's interesting to me that if we were to care for these people as individuals, if we were to give them good, informed, at-home primary care, we were to deliver it 24/7, we were to listen to what they want, let them decide with good information what kinds of treatments they want and what kinds of treatments they don't want, which is better care for them. The magical thing is that that care is going to cost a fraction of what we're wasting trying to fix what we can't fix.
Now, when you retired a couple of years ago, you were profiled in the local Courier paper here. The piece said that you were one of only three doctors who did house calls. Is that still the case today?
In Canada, I think it said, I knew of only three who did nothing but house calls. There's more now. I know of three in Vancouver, one in Victoria, one in Toronto, but that's just my knowledge base. I think there are more and more of us doing this kind of care. And there are lots of family doctors out there who are willing to see people at home, but who still maintain a traditional office.
Now, how does it change to the system so that we can provide the elderly with 24/7 care at home? How does that happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. We in my business and in home care nursing and social work and rehab and pharmacy and everything else have to be motivated to do that. The tendency is for us to default to the emergency room outside office hours, which I've tried to describe as, you know, just a road to disaster. So more and more, I guess we have to train doctors and somehow get a hold of the ear of physicians and the public and other health professionals and shout as loud as we can that this is what we need. There has been a change, there's a terrific change, excuse me, in British Columbia to the house call fee item. It's better paid now than it used to be. And so I'm seeing more of my colleagues, and, you know, we must face the reality that, that medical practice in Canada at this time is a business. You know, and you have costs and you have income, and you have to do the thing that that pays the rent. So with this fee increase in the house call fee item, more and more doctors see that it's starting to make sense to do what they really know is the best best kind of care for people stuck at home.
No, you write in the book that the level of awareness for caring for the elderly is quite low, and that that's not just doctors, but it, it's also, you know, caregivers, families, and the sort. Do you think it's increasing because boomers are growing older?
Sure. Sure it is. And you know, I'm one. And I think we're starting to appreciate, you know, the our parents are there, most of us. Mine, as it happens, are gone, but most people's parents are elderly and getting fragile. And here we are as a big group, we're faced with these problems. And, of course, the healthcare system is faced with the population explosion that isn't going to stop in the next 5 years or 10 years or 30 years. Population explosion of old people.
Yeah. In reading the book, I was curious to see who you wrote the book for. Was there a goal in mind when you started this project?
Yeah, I was helped, as one is when one writes a book, a great deal by the wonderful editors who said to me, now, you know, you got to be talking to somebody here. And I ended up sort of spinning the book toward caregivers. And that would be typically those baby boomers or, you know, an aging spouse or a neighbor or a friend, somebody who has the responsibility for helping an old person manage their activities of daily living, find their way through the system, make decisions about what they're going to do and not do. So that's kind of who I'm talking to. But in a way, you know, you try to make points in this sort of a subject situation that go over the heads of most of us and maybe, you know, decision makers, the people who actually allocate the funding and who are responsible for the way healthcare goes in the community, will listen too, I hope.
Are we better prepared, though? I mean, you talked earlier about the explosion of the population in terms of boomers and the sort. Are we equipped to do this, do you think, in the future, especially here in British Columbia?
We're equipped to do it the way I advise we do it, which is primary care, one-on-one, low-tech, at-home, 24/7 care. We can do it. Absolutely, we can do it. What we're not equipped to do is to continue to give the increasing numbers of frail elderly people the kind of care that the system calls best practice and prescribes for all of the various conditions they have, which I argue can't help them. And if we continue to try to do that, I think we're going to be in terrible trouble.
Now, you mentioned earlier that we're not giving the elderly the care that they needed or wanted. Do you find that the elderly are not consulted in terms of what they want or what they need?
Often, and often there's a good reason for that. You know, an old person who has enough Alzheimer's disease that they can't meaningfully consider a question,
right,
like whether they should go to the hospital or not. You know, that's not somebody that it makes sense to consult. But we often, you know, that the trouble is that as caregivers, and I see this time and time again, we will say to ourselves and to an old person, look, I don't know what's wrong with you. You know, you're not walking as well as you were last week. You look terrible. Your medication hasn't changed. I don't know what's the matter. I can't get a hold of the doctor on the phone. What are we going to do? And we're socialized to respond to that by sending the person to the hospital with the results that I've already talked about. I think we can do this better, and I think we need to just change our approach to who's really responsible for these folks.
Do you think families and caregivers and the sort, do you think they're getting it, that they're becoming more savvy?
Slowly, yeah, for sure. Oh, for sure. But you can't expect a family, you can't expect a caregiver to take real responsibility for an old person and to rely on primary care services if those services aren't there. You know, if you phone the home care nurse at 7 o'clock at night and you get a recording that says we're closed, phone back at 9 in the morning, and you know the old lady is short of breath, and then you call the doctor and you get a recording that says take her to the emergency room, you know, that doesn't support the change in attitude that you're talking about with caregivers. So we need to be there as a healthcare system and as healthcare professionals. And then we can begin to expect that people's views will change, that they're willing to risk, you know, diagnosing, treating, and taking the outcome of an episode of breathlessness, for example, at home, which is well within the capability of a family doctor. You know, you won't be 100% right, but then, boy, the hospital is going to be 100% wrong in a whole bunch of different ways. I think we in the healthcare business have a responsibility, and once we meet that, then we can expect caregivers to start to think about things differently.
What's the most important lesson that you give your students about practicing medicine, especially to older patients?
Medical students.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, think about the individual situation. Don't just apply the guidelines without thought. And they, you know, when I say that to these wonderful people that I'm lucky enough to be able to, you know, teach, and I use teach in quotation marks there, I get this astounded look. What? You mean you don't want me to treat osteoporosis with a ... kind of medication? You mean you don't want me to have this person whose heart function is less than the average of the Vancouver Canucks but who isn't sick with it? You mean you don't want me to have that person on three different kinds of medications? And my answer is no. Not unless it's in their interest. Not unless you're sure that the evidence applies to them. Not unless it makes them function or feel better. And the students, you know, they kind of scratch their heads and, gee, that's not what they taught us in med school. But that's an important lesson, as far as I'm concerned.
Dr. Sloan, this is a fascinating book, and it's been a fascinating conversation. Continued good luck with the book, and congratulations with it.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. When I'm at my doctor, I see a lot of elderly patients, so this book was quite interesting. Do pick it up. It's a timely book and instructive. It's called The Bitter Pill: How the Medical System is Failing the Elderly. It's published by Greystone. Its author, Dr. John Sloan, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.